The Truth About Angels, Chapter 5. The Rebellious Angels Are Cast Out, and Adam and Eve Fall. War in Heaven. Christ had worked in the heavenly courts to convince Satan of his terrible error, till at last the evil one and his sympathizers were found in open rebellion against God himself. Christ, as commander of heaven, was appointed to put down the rebellion. Then there was war in heaven. The Son of God, the Prince of Heaven, and his loyal angels engaged in conflict with the arch-rebel and those who united with him. The Son of God and true loyal angels prevailed, and Satan and his sympathizers were expelled from heaven. Angels were engaged in the battle. Satan wished to conquer the Son of God and those who were submissive to his will. But the good and true angels prevailed, and Satan with his followers was driven from heaven. The effects of rebellion. Satan stood in amazement at his new condition. His happiness was gone. He looked upon the angels who, with him, were once so happy, but who had been expelled from heaven. Now all seemed changed. Countenances which had reflected the image of their Maker were gloomy and despairing. Strife, discord, and bitter recrimination were among them. Satan now beholds the terrible results of his rebellion. He shuddered and feared to face the future and to contemplate the end of these things. The hour for joyful, happy songs of praise to God and his dear Son had come. Satan had led the heavenly choir. He had raised the first note. Then all the angelic host united with him, and glorious strains of music had resounded through heaven in honor of God and his dear Son. But now, instead of strains of sweetest music, discord and angry words fall upon the ear of the great rebel leader. The hour of worship draws nigh, when bright and holy angels bow before the Father. No more will he unite in heavenly song. No more will he bow in reverence and holy awe before the presence of the eternal God. Satan trembled as he viewed his work. He was alone in meditation upon the past, the present, and his future plans. His mighty frame shook as with a tempest. An angel from heaven was passing. He called him and entreated an interview with Christ. This was granted him. He then related to the Son of God that he repented of his rebellion and wished again the favor of God. He was willing to take the place God had previously assigned him and be under his wise command. Christ wept at Satan's woe, but told him, as the mind of God, that he could never be received into heaven. The seeds of rebellion were still within him. When Satan became fully convinced that there was no possibility of his being reinstated in the favor of God, he manifested his malice with increased hatred and fiery vehemence. As he could not gain admission within the gates of heaven, he would wait just at the entrance to taunt the angels and seek contention with them as they went in and out. The creation of earth and humankind. The loyal angels mourned the fate of those who had been their companions in happiness and bliss. Their loss was felt in heaven. The Father consulted Jesus in regard to at once carrying out their purpose to make man to inhabit the earth. The brightest and most exalted of the sons of the morning heralded Christ's glory at creation and announced his birth with songs of gladness. When God formed the earth, there were mountains, hills, and plains, and interspersed among them were rivers and bodies of water. The earth was not one extensive plain, but the monotony of the scenery was broken by hills and mountains, not high and ragged as they are now, but regular and beautiful in shape. Angels beheld and rejoiced at the wonderful and beautiful works of God. all heaven took a deep and joyful interest in the creation of the world and of man. Human beings were a new and distinct order. Next to the angelic beings, the human family, formed in the image of God, are the noblest of His created works. The Lord had endowed Adam with powers of mind superior to any living creature that He had made. His mental powers were but little lower than those of the angels. As soon as the Lord, through Jesus Christ, created our world and placed Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, Satan announced his purpose to conform to his own nature the father and mother of all humanity. When the Lord presented Eve to Adam, angels of God were witnesses to the ceremony. This sinless pair wore no artificial garments. They were clothed with a covering of light and glory, such as the angels wear. God created man for His own glory, that after test and trial, the human family might become one with the heavenly family. It was God's purpose to repopulate heaven with the human family. The vacancies made in heaven by the fall of Satan and his angels will be filled by the redeemed of the Lord. Adam and Eve in Eden. Although everything God had made was in the perfection of beauty, and there seemed nothing wanting upon the earth which God had created to make Adam and Eve happy, yet He manifested His great love to them by planting a garden especially for them. A portion of their time was to be occupied in the happy employment of dressing the garden, and a portion in receiving the visits of angels, listening to their instruction, and in happy meditation. Their labor was not wearisome, but pleasant and invigorating. Holy angels gave instruction to Adam and Eve concerning their employment, and also taught them concerning the rebellion of Satan and his fall. He, Adam, stood before God in the strength of perfect manhood, all the organs and faculties of his being fully developed and harmoniously balanced. And he was surrounded with things of beauty and conversed daily with the holy angels. The law of God existed before man was created. It was adapted to the condition of holy beings. Even angels were governed by it. Man was to be tested and proved, and if he should bear the test of God and remain loyal and true after the first trial, he was not to be beset with continual temptations, but was to be exalted equal with the angels, and henceforth immortal. Satan plans to cause man's fall. He, Satan, informed them, his angel followers, of his plans to wrest from God the noble Adam and his companion, Eve. If he could in any way beguile them to disobedience, God would make some provision whereby they might be pardoned, and then himself and all the fallen angels would be in a fair way to share with them of God's mercy. If this should fail, they could unite with Adam and Eve, for when once they should transgress the law of God, they would be subjects of God's wrath, like themselves. Their transgression would place them also in a state of rebellion, and they could unite with Adam and Eve, take possession of Eden, and hold it as their home. And if they could gain access to the tree of life in the midst of the garden, their strength would, they thought, be equal to that of the holy angels, and even God Himself could not expel them. Satan held a consultation with his evil angels. They did not all readily unite to engage in this hazardous and terrible work. He told them that he would not entrust any one of them to accomplish this work, for he thought that he alone had wisdom sufficient to carry forward so important an enterprise. He wished them to consider the matter, while he should leave them and seek retirement to mature his plans. Satan went alone to mature plans that would most surely secure the fall of Adam and Eve. He shuddered at the thought of plunging the holy, happy pair into the misery and remorse he was himself enduring. He seemed in a state of indecision, at one time firm and determined, then hesitating and wavering. His angels were seeking him, their leader, to acquaint him with their decision. They will unite with Satan in his plans, and with him bear the responsibility and share the consequences. Satan cast off his feelings of despair and weakness, and as their leader, fortified himself to brave out the matter and do all in his power to defy the authority of God and his Son. Satan declared that he would prove to the worlds which God had created and to the heavenly intelligences that it was an impossibility to keep the law of God. God assembled the angelic host to take measures to avert the threatened evil. It was decided in heaven's council for angels to visit Eden and warn Adam that he was in danger from the foe. Accordingly, two angels sped on their way to visit our first parents. Heavenly messengers opened to them, Adam and Eve, the history of Satan's fall and his plots for their destruction, unfolding more fully the nature of the divine government, which the prince of evil was trying to overthrow. The angels warned them to be on their guard against the devices of Satan, for his efforts to ensnare them would be unwearied. While they were obedient to God, the evil one could not harm them, for, if need be, every angel in heaven would be sent to their help. If they steadfastly repelled his first insinuations, they would be as secure as the heavenly messengers. But should they once yield to temptation, their nature would become so depraved that in themselves they would have no power and no disposition to resist Satan. The angels cautioned Eve not to separate from her husband in her employment, for she might be brought in contact with this fallen foe. If separated from each other, they would be in greater danger than if both were together. The angels charged them to closely follow the instructions God had given them in reference to the tree of knowledge, for in perfect obedience they were safe, and this fallen foe could have access to them only at the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve assured the angels that they should never transgress the express command of God, for it was their highest pleasure to do his will. The angels united with Adam and Eve in holy strains of harmonious music, and as their songs pealed forth from blissful Eden, Satan heard the sound of their strains of joyful adoration to the Father and Son. And as Satan heard it, his envy, hatred, and malignity increased, and he expressed his anxiety to his followers to incite them, Adam and Eve, to disobedience. Satan speaks to Eve through a serpent. In order to accomplish his work unperceived, Satan chose to employ as his medium the serpent, a disguise well adapted for his purpose of deception. The serpent was then one of the wisest and most beautiful creatures on the earth. It had wings, and while flying through the air, presented an appearance of dazzling brightness, having the color and brilliancy of burnished gold. Eve went from the side of her husband, viewing the beautiful things of nature in God's creation, delighting her senses with the colors and fragrance of the flowers and the beauty of the trees and shrubs. She was thinking of the restriction God had laid upon them in regard to the tree of knowledge. She was pleased with the beauties and bounties which the Lord had furnished for the gratification of every want. "All these," said she, "God has given us to enjoy. They are all ours, for God has said, 'Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it.'" Eve had wandered near the forbidden tree, and her curiosity was aroused to know how death could be concealed in the fruit of this fair tree. She was surprised to hear her queries taken up and repeated by a strange voice. Yea, hath God said, Ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Eve was not aware that she had revealed her thoughts by conversing to herself aloud. Therefore, she was greatly astonished to hear her queries repeated by a serpent. With soft and pleasant words and with musical voice, he, Satan, addressed the wondering Eve. She was startled to hear a serpent speak. He extolled her beauty and exceeding loveliness, which was not displeasing to Eve. Eve was beguiled, flattered, infatuated. She, Eve, really thought the serpent had a knowledge of her thoughts, and that he must be very wise. She answered him, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, Ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, Ye shall not surely die, for God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. Here the father of lies made his assertion in direct contradiction to the expressed word of God. Satan assured Eve that she was created immortal, and that there was no possibility of her dying. He told her that God knew that if they ate of the tree of knowledge, their understanding would be enlightened, expanded, and ennobled, making them equal with himself. Eve thought the discourse of the serpent very wise. She looked with longing desire upon the tree laden with fruit, which appeared very delicious. The serpent was eating it with apparent delight. Eve had overstated the words of God's command. He had said to Adam and Eve, But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. In Eve's controversy with the serpent, she added the clause, Neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. Here the subtlety of the serpent was seen. This statement of Eve gave him advantage. By partaking of this tree, he, Satan, declared they would attain to a more exalted sphere of existence and enter a broader field of knowledge. He himself had eaten of the forbidden fruit, and as a result had acquired the power of speech. And he insinuated that the Lord jealously desired to withhold it from them, lest they should be exalted to equality with himself. Eve's curiosity was aroused. Instead of fleeing from the spot, she listened to hear a serpent talk. It did not occur to her mind that it might be that fallen foe, using the serpent as a medium. With what intense interest the whole universe watched the conflict that was to decide the position of Adam and Eve. How attentively the angels listened to the words of Satan, the originator of sin, as he placed his own ideas above the commands of God and sought to make of none effect the law of God through his deceptive reasoning. How anxiously they waited to see if the holy pair would be deluded by the tempter and yield to his arts. Satan represented God as a deceiver, as one who would debar his creatures from the benefit of his highest gift. The angels heard with sorrow and amazement this statement in regard to the character of God, as Satan represented him as possessing his own miserable attributes. But Eve was not horror-stricken to hear the holy and supreme God thus falsely accused. If she had remembered all the tokens of his love, if she had fled to her husband, she might have been saved from the subtle temptation of the evil one. The tempter plucked the fruit and passed it to Eve. She took it in her hand. Now, said the tempter, you were prohibited from even touching it, lest you die. He told her that she would realize no more sense of evil and death in eating than in touching or handling the fruit. Eve was emboldened because she felt not the immediate signs of God's displeasure. She thought the words of the tempter all wise and correct. She ate and was delighted with the fruit. It seemed delicious to her taste, and she imagined that she realized in herself the wonderful effects of the fruit. There was nothing poisonous in the fruit of the tree of knowledge itself, nothing that would cause death in partaking of it. The tree had been placed in the garden to test their loyalty to God. Eve eats the fruit and tempts Adam. Eve ate and imagined that she felt the sensations of a new and more exalted life. She felt no ill effects from the fruit, nothing which could be interpreted to mean death, but, just as the serpent had said, a pleasurable sensation which she imagined was as the angels felt. She then plucked for herself of the fruit and ate, and imagined she felt the quickening power of a new and elevated existence as the result of the exhilarating influence of the forbidden fruit. She was in a strange and unnatural excitement as she sought her husband, with her hands filled with the forbidden fruit. She related to him the wise discourse of the serpent, and wished to conduct him at once to the tree of knowledge. She told him she had eaten of the fruit, and instead of her feeling any sense of death, she realized a pleasing, exhilarating influence. As soon as Eve had disobeyed, she became a powerful medium through which to occasion the fall of her husband. An expression of sadness came over the face of Adam. He appeared astonished and alarmed. To the words of Eve, he replied that this must be the foe against whom they had been warned, and by the divine sentence, she must die. In answer, she urged him to eat, repeating the words of the serpent, that they should not surely die. She reasoned that this must be true, for she felt no evidence of God's displeasure. Adam understood that his companion had transgressed the command of God, disregarded the only prohibition laid upon them as a test of their fidelity and love. There was a terrible struggle in his mind. He mourned that he had permitted Eve to wander from his side. But now the deed was done. He must be separated from her whose society had been his joy. How could he have it thus? He resolved to share her fate. If she must die, he would die with her. After all, he reasoned, might not the words of the wise serpent be true? Eve was before him, as beautiful and apparently as innocent as before this act of disobedience. She expressed greater love for him than before. No sign of death appeared in her, and he decided to brave the consequences. He seized the fruit and quickly ate. After his transgression, Adam at first imagined himself entering upon a higher state of existence. But soon the thought of his sin filled him with terror. The air, which had hitherto been of a mild and uniform temperature, seemed to chill the guilty pair. The love and peace which had been theirs was gone, and in its place they felt a sense of sin, a dread of the future, a nakedness of soul. Satan exulted in his success. He had now tempted the woman to distrust God, to question his wisdom, and to seek to penetrate his all-wise plans. And through her, he had also caused the overthrow of Adam, who, in consequence of his love for Eve, disobeyed the command of God and fell with her. Satan, the fallen angel, had declared that no man could keep God's law, and he pointed to the disobedience of Adam as proving the declaration true. Satan proudly boasted that the world which God had made was his dominion. Having conquered Adam, the monarch of the world, he had gained the race as his subjects, and he should now possess Eden and make that his headquarters. And he would there establish his throne and be monarch of the world. The Council of Peace. The news of man's fall spread through heaven. Every harp was hushed. the angels cast their crowns from their heads in sorrow. All heaven was in agitation. A council was held to decide what must be done with the guilty pair. The anxiety of the angels seemed to be intense while Jesus was communing with his Father. Three times he was shut in by the glorious light about the Father, and the third time he came from the Father, his person could be seen. He then made known to the angelic host that a way of escape had been made for lost man. He told them that he had been pleading with his Father and had offered to give his life a ransom, to take the sentence of death upon himself, that through him man might find pardon. At first, the angels could not rejoice, for their commander concealed nothing from them, but opened before them the plan of salvation. Jesus told them that he would leave all his glory in heaven, appear upon earth as a man, humble himself as a man, and that finally, after his mission as a teacher would be accomplished, he would be delivered into the hands of men and endure almost every cruelty and suffering that Satan and his angels could inspire men to inflict, that he would die the cruelest of deaths, hung up between the heavens and the earth as a guilty sinner, that he should suffer dreadful hours of agony, which even angels could not look upon, but would veil their faces from the sight. The angels prostrated themselves before him. They offered their lives. Jesus said to them that he would, by his death, save many, that the life of an angel could not pay the debt. His life alone could be accepted of the Father as a ransom for man. The angels feared that they, Adam and Eve, would put forth the hand and eat of the tree of life and be immortal sinners. But God said that he would drive the transgressors from the garden. Angels were commissioned immediately to guard the way of the tree of life. The angels who had been appointed to guard Adam in his Eden home before his transgression and expulsion from paradise were now appointed to guard the gates of paradise and the way of the tree of life. When Adam and Eve realized how exalted and sacred was the law of God, the transgression of which made so costly a sacrifice necessary to save them and their posterity from utter ruin, they pled to die themselves or to let them and their posterity endure the penalty of their transgression, rather than that the beloved Son of God should make this great sacrifice. Adam was informed that an angel's life could not pay the debt. The law of Jehovah, the foundation of his government in heaven and upon earth, was as sacred as God himself, and for this reason the life of an angel could not be accepted of God as a sacrifice for its transgression. The Father could not abolish nor change one precept of his law to meet man in his fallen condition. But the Son of God, who had in unison with the Father created man, could make an atonement for man acceptable to God. When Adam, according to God's special directions, made an offering for sin, it was to him a most painful ceremony. His hand must be raised to take life, which God alone could give, and make an offering for sin. It was the first time he had witnessed death. As he looked upon the bleeding victim, writhing in the agonies of death, he was to look forward by faith to the Son of God, whom the victim prefigured. Adam and Eve expelled from Eden. They, Adam and Eve, were informed that they would have to lose their Eden home. It was not safe for them to remain in the Garden of Eden, lest in their state of sin they gain access to the tree of life. They, Adam and Eve, earnestly entreated that they might remain in the home of their innocence and joy. They confessed that they had forfeited all right to that happy abode, but pledged themselves for the future to yield strict obedience to God. But they were told that their nature had become depraved by sin. They had lessened their strength to resist evil, and had opened the way for Satan to gain more ready access to them. In their innocence, they had yielded to temptation, and now, in a state of conscious guilt, they would have less power to maintain their integrity. In humility and unutterable sadness, they bade farewell to their beautiful home and went forth to dwell upon the earth, where rested the curse of sin. Holy angels were sent to drive out the disobedient pair from the garden, while other angels guarded the way to the tree of life. Each one of these mighty angels had in his right hand a glittering sword. Strong angels with beams of light, representing flaming swords turning in every direction, were placed as sentinels to guard the way of the tree of life from the approach of Satan and the guilty pair. It was Satan's studied plan that Adam and Eve should disobey God, receive his frown, and then partake of the tree of life, that they might perpetuate a life of sin. But holy angels were sent to debar their way to the tree of life. Around these angels flashed beams of light on every side, which had the appearance of glittering swords. After the fall, Satan bade his angels make special effort to foster the belief in man's natural immortality. And when they had induced the people to receive this error, they led them to conclude that the sinner would live in eternal misery.